From ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson.
I know he's all right, and I know our government will do their best to make sure he comes home safely.
Donna Hall of Brooksville, Florida, wife of one of the two American servicemen who has been in North Korea ever since their helicopter went down. It's not clear whether it was shot down or made an emergency landing over North Korean territory. That country says it'll give information on Chief Warrant Officers Bobby Hall and David Heilman of Clarksville, Tennessee, as soon as it finishes its investigation.
Both sides wanted to end peacefully and quickly. Of course, the U.S. side wanted to get its soldiers back into their hands, and of course the North Korea wants better relations with the United States following the signing of the Washington-Pyongyang Accord, under which the North Koreans give up their weapons development program, their nuclear weapons development program.
ABC's Mike Wengert in Seoul, South Korea. Former President Jimmy Carter's arrived in Croatia's capital, Zagreb, in the former Yugoslavia. He's invited by the president of Bosnian Serbs to try to get peace talks resumed. Mr. Carter plans to go to the Bosnian capital, Sarajevo, and he's come on the same day another key Bosnian city has fallen to the Serbs. Reports are sketchy on what's happening in the Russian breakaway region, Chechnya. Moscow's overnight deadline to disarm was ignored. Reports say Russian warplanes bombed the outskirts of the Chechen capital.
For the Russian president, this has been a huge political gamble. Most politicians here in Moscow think he was wrong to send the troops into Chechnya, and everyone seems to want a negotiated solution to the crisis. Now that the Chechen president has agreed to talk, that seems to be a possibility.
ABC's Jennifer Glass in Moscow. Those officers in Florida highway patrol cars are no dummies, but their replacements are. Troopers complain they go from crash to crash and have little time to enforce traffic laws. Accident victims often wait more than an hour for a trooper. So the highway patrol will put mannequins in some cruisers next year to ease the personnel shortage. You're listening to ABC News.
If you wear contact lenses, we'd like you to meet 800-800-LENS customer Misty Hellyer of Santa Fe, New Mexico.
I still can't believe it myself, but every time I order my contacts from 800-800-LENS, I save 50%. Their customer service is wonderful, and that's really important to me. Plus, it's so convenient. The lenses are delivered right to my door.
With fast, convenient delivery of all major brands, replacing your contact lenses has never been easier.
I've recommended 800-800-LENS to my friends, family, anyone I know that wears contacts. 800-800-LENS, fast, reliable service with really great savings.
Whether you wear hard or soft lenses, disposables, gas permeables, or torics, as long as your prescription is current, 800-800-LENS will keep you from seeing double and paying double. Call us at 1-800-800-LENS. That's 1-800-800-LENS.
Officials say the 9mm bullets found in the White House grounds yesterday may have been stray, may not have been targeted at the president. Investigators say the bullets look like they traveled a long distance. Cold weather is causing many lower-income people to take drastic measures to heat their homes, according to ABC's Chuck Taylor at a Washington, D.C. firehouse.
Many people in poor neighborhoods across America die trying to keep warm in the winter. Otis Layton, chief of the fire department in Washington, D.C., told a news conference here at Engine Company No. 2 that heating equipment is the leading cause of home fires in December, January, and February.
When residents don't have sufficient heat and light, they use candles, kerosene, wood, and charcoal.
Chief Layton says children under the age of 6 and the elderly are most at risk of dying in unsafe home heating fires. Chuck Taylor, ABC News, at a firehouse in Washington, D.C.
Syria is not pleased with Uncle Sam for voting against a U.N. resolution calling for Israel to pull out of the Golan Heights. A judge has handed down a sentence that's not unprecedented, but still very rare. It concerns Bill Mary Cotto, who's 20 years old and whose baby girl drowned in a bathtub. The judge told her women without the resources or skills to raise children shouldn't get pregnant, so he's ordered her to use birth control while on probation. This is ABC News.
Hi, David Garner again, president of Connect Long Distance, with a challenge to all small business folks who spend $100 or more on long distance each month. Call us at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE with your most recent phone bill. Based on your actual calls, we'll show you exactly how much money Connect will save you on each call. No ifs, ands, or buts. Just plain and simple savings of up to 20% off the big boys' basic rates every minute of every hour of every day. Put us to the test. Call us at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Chuck Sievertson.
From ABC News, World News This Week, I'm Dave Barron, ABC News. Listen.
It was just a thud, a sickening thud when something hit the ground.
One wing hit the ground and it just blew up.
I'm stunned that anything like this would happen to anyone, and especially in a community like this.
Now I want to cut taxes for each child under 13, phased up to $500 per child.
We're dead set on negotiating a resolution to this dispute.
13% of the eighth graders said that they had tried marijuana at least once in the past year.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
Hi, David Garner again, president of Connect Long Distance. And I've just taken a phone call from a Mr. Pete Warren, who owns a small but thriving office supply company right on the border of Indiana and Illinois. Now, even though most of his best customers are right across the street, due to a fluke of arcane zoning laws and geography, he can only reach them by making out-of-state long-distance calls. As you can imagine, the expense is really killing him. In fact, he's concerned that he might have to pack up his company and move across the street to Illinois. Well, I assured him that if he switched over to Connect, we could save him up to 20% on his long-distance bills. And with those kinds of savings, he'd be able to stay right where he is. Of course, with our nationwide fiber optic technology, his customers will think he's calling them from right across the street, which, in this case, he is. So if you're a small business person, give us a call at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. That's 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. See, we're saving you money already.
Again this week, concern for safety in the air. The concern was heightened when a small commuter plane operated by American Eagle crashed just short of the runway at Raleigh-Durham Airport in North Carolina. Earl Butts was nearby.
We're on the in-flight pattern for Raleigh-Durham Airport, and there was just a thud, a sickening thud when something hit the ground about, I don't know, a quarter of a mile, eighth of a mile away from us.
20 people were aboard that plane, not one of the controversial ATR models this time, but a British-built Jetstream. 15 of them died. James Hall, chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board, said the investigation is focusing on engine trouble.
There is discussion on the cockpit voice recorder of an engine flameout. There is discussion about flying a missed approach. There is further discussion of which engine is not operating properly.
Aviation expert David Learmount in London says the Jetstream, unlike the ATR aircraft involved in other recent commuter plane crashes, does not have a problem in icing conditions.
It's a good safety rate. It doesn't mean that there's any degree of danger, but if you're nervous about flying, then I suggest you go by Greyhound.
That's what a lot of people ended up doing this week as American Eagle grounded itself and other commuter lines took steps to get those ATR planes to warmer climates. John McDonald speaks for Trans World Express, the commuter carrier for TWA.
We're looking ahead for a 72-hour period, and basically, if we have icing or suspected icing conditions forecast, then we're going to cancel those flights and reprotect our passengers just as quickly as possible.
The commuter planes weren't the only flights in trouble this week. In Fresno, California, a civilian plane leased to the military came down on a street, igniting a fireball at an apartment building. This man saw the crash.
Came down. Kind of cockeyed. One wing hit the ground and it just blew up. And the wreckage and fire just came all the way up the street.
Barbara McKinley, who owns an office across the street from the crash site in Fresno, says she's lucky she was out of the office when the wreckage exploded.
If I had been sitting at my desk, I would have been dead. There is a big metal pipe jammed into the wall about my height sitting at a desk.
The explosion forced people to leap for their lives from the burning apartment building. Francisco La Rosa was nearby.
There was this guy on top of a burning building, and they just threw him a baby, and then after that, they threw him this lady, and then that other guy just jumped off.
Transportation Secretary Federico Pena says his agency is moving rapidly to upgrade safety standards for smaller planes.
We're going to make sure that as soon as we possibly can, all those standards are increased so that whether you fly on a small plane or a large plane, the standards of safety will be the same.
Safety in flight doesn't just mean that the plane won't crash. The Flight Attendants Union this week won permission to file a class action lawsuit against the tobacco industry, claiming injuries from the days when planes had smoking sections. Carol Chu of United Airlines said the situation was terrible.
Sometimes you could hardly see the front of the aircraft if you're working the back of a DC-8.
It looked for a while as if the nation would see one big airline jam up as Christmas neared. Not only were the commuter flights in trouble, but the government ordered one carrier, Kiwi International, to ground itself while it checked the pilots' training. Kiwi flies along the busy East Coast from Newark, New Jersey to Florida and Chicago, but Kiwi chairman Bob Iverson said his company passed its test with flying colors.
24 hours later, Kiwi's back and better than ever. There was never a question that this airline had any safety problems. The FAA has worked very diligently and very cooperatively to get this airline back where it rightfully belongs.
As the slogan says, there's something about a train that's magic, but there's a little less magic on the rails this week as Amtrak, fearing another huge budget deficit, cut service 21%. Amtrak President Thomas Downs says it couldn't be helped.
The actions we're taking preserve a national system. As a matter of fact, we think it will improve the quality of the residual system.
Gone is service from New York to Montreal. Gone is the short run from Chicago to Milwaukee. And other trains will run less frequently. These train passengers think it's a shame.
They need to advertise more. There's more fun in riding a train.
I would imagine that they're having a lot of competition with the airlines.
This is part of our national infrastructure. And I think it's extremely short-sighted to cut back on Amtrak service.
Of course, there's always the car. Jill Mulross of AAA says even that takes some planning these days.
Give yourself plenty of time, whether you're going to the airport. Probably 2 hours ahead is not far-fetched. Also, in terms of auto travel, not only leave early, but be prepared, have games, quiet toys in the car if you're traveling with children. Those things help make the holiday much more memorable.
Terror on the ground this week as the person known to police as Unabomb struck again. This time his target was Thomas Moser, a high-powered advertising executive who was killed instantly when he opened a package addressed to him. Eric Levin was visiting in the house at the time.
Under all this mail was a small package. It looked like checks, like checkbooks came in it. It was just nothing. It was under a sack of mail, and it had pink and white computer paper on it.
The bombing shocked the well-to-do community of North Caldwell, New Jersey. Arlene Haber is a neighbor.
I'm stunned that anything like this would happen to anyone, and especially in a community like this, which is very safe, very suburban, and just a very nice area.
Police are likewise at a loss. Unabomb has struck sporadically over a period of more than a decade, sending letter bombs or package bombs, generally to people involved in high technology or academic work. But security consultant Bob Strang says anyone in the public eye could be a target.
Whether you're a CEO, president of a corporation, or someone who's, a personality of some type, there's always someone out there that may not like what you say. They may not like what you stand for.
The investigation of the bombing quickly moved to San Francisco, the place from which the bomb was apparently mailed. FBI Special Agent Jim Freeman says authorities know a lot about Unabomb, just about everything except who he is, where he is, and what he wants.
We're dealing with an individual we feel is a loner. We don't think that he confides in anyone, or certainly very limited sphere of people. That's one of the primary reasons for us to offer such a large reward, a $1 million reward, in hopes that if he has confided in someone, even a family member, that they would come forward.
In Washington, politicians continued to analyze the results of the November election. One clear message of the voters seemed to be cut the size of government, cut government spending. But a special bipartisan commission chaired by two senior senators said that's easier said than done. Republican John Danforth of Missouri said entitlements are the problem.
There is no responsible way to deal with the budget problem, much less the problem of Social Security itself, without having Social Security on the table, Medicare, the other entitlement programs. It simply can't be done. This is called the third rail of politics. You touch it, and you're dead.
But that didn't stop other members of the Washington establishment from proposing tax cuts. Richard Gephardt, who will be the minority leader in the new House of Representatives, wants his tax cut to apply to all workers.
Anyone earning less than $75,000 a year, whether or not they have children,
as opposed to the Republicans who would give it to the wealthiest Americans as long as they have children.
President Clinton doesn't want to go quite that far. In a nationwide broadcast address this week, he proposed a new set of deductions that would add up to a tax cut for a lot of middle-income people.
I want to cut taxes for each child under 13, phased up to $500 per child. This tax cut would be available to any family whose income is less than $75,000.
Under the Clinton plan, college tuition would be as deductible as mortgage interest.
I propose that all tuition for college, community college, graduate school, professional school, vocational education, or worker retraining after high school be fully deductible, phased up to $10,000 a year, for families making up to $120,000 a year.
In a Republican response to the president's message, Senator Fred Thompson of Tennessee said, hey, it's a start.
Your vote this election apparently got the president's attention. If the president's new position tonight represents a real change of heart, we say welcome aboard. If we can actually cut Washington down to size and put the savings back into the pockets of the people who earned it, we won't need to argue over who gets the credit or who thought of the idea first.
But a tax cut has its opponents, most notably from the business community, which fears a new round of inflation. Irwin Kellner of New York's Chemical Bank explained...
Both the Republican and the Democratic plans for cutting taxes are going to run into stiff opposition from the bond markets, who are very concerned about any fiscal measures that will widen the budget deficit.
Alarms of a different kind this weekend as someone, no one knows who, fired a couple of rounds into the White House grounds. Eric Harnischfeger of the Secret Service told us what is known.
Two 9mm rounds have been located on the grounds near the south portico of the White House. Preliminary examination indicates that both rounds had been fired from the same weapon.
President Clinton and his wife were in the building at the time, but the Secret Service says they were never in any danger. And these visitors taking a weekend tour of the White House weren't scared off either.
We didn't think we were going to make it this morning. But I said, let's give it a shot, and here we are.
Gunfire could have been tragic in an Albany, New York college classroom this week as a gunman held a group of students hostage for 2 hours. The standoff ended when 19-year-old Jason McEnany tackled the gunman. McEnany went to the hospital with bullet wounds as a result of his bravery, but his parents say he'll be as good as new in a few weeks.
He acted to handle a situation. He thought he was going to be killed, and he was reasonably sure that that man was going to kill him.
Okay. He looked into his eyes. He says, it's either do or die, and that was it.
Gunfire as usual this week in Bosnia. This time, four UN peacekeepers were injured when anti-tank missiles were fired at a humanitarian convoy. UN spokesman Edward Joseph is in Bihać.
The first impact happened. The APC caught fire. The Bangladeshis who were in front of this armored personnel carrier stopped and with fire extinguishers and were trying to put out the fire. And it was during that time that the second anti-tank missile hit.
And this week, former President Jimmy Carter, who helped end the turmoil in Haiti, said he'd like to see what he could do in Bosnia.
I don't expect to be an expert on the situation in Bosnia-Herzegovina. That's not my area of interest. But if I can contribute in a small way to supplement or to complement what the United Nations and others are doing, then I think it would be fruitful.
What Americans don't want is to see U.S. troops committed to the war in Bosnia or anywhere else at the moment. But this week it appeared the U.S. might once again land Marines in Somalia. ABC's John McQuethy, who accompanied Secretary of Defense Perry on a trip to Russia, explained why.
10 months after the last American soldiers were pulled out of Somalia, the Clinton administration is moving toward briefly putting U.S. troops back into Mogadishu. Defense Secretary Perry, on his way home from Russia, told reporters that American Marines were now steaming toward Somalia. If the president gives a final okay, a U.S. force of up to 3,000 Marines could go ashore, probably in January, to provide cover for the final withdrawal of all U.N. peacekeepers.
The proposal for even a limited engagement in Somalia immediately drew fire. Colonel David Hackworth writes about military affairs for Newsweek magazine.
The last time we were in Somalia, we paid a total of 44 dead, 244 wounded, and it cost this country over $2 billion. Why should we repeat what was a bad move 2 years ago.
In another part of the world, happier faces, President Clinton this week concluded the Summit of the Americas in Miami with an announcement that Chile, a South American country with a newly strong economy, would be invited to join Canada, the U.S., and Mexico in the NAFTA free trade zone.
The mission of this summit was accomplished. First, in our specific commitment to a free trade agreement of the Americas by 2005, which, going with NAFTA, with Chile's coming into the NAFTA partnership, with the recent success of the GATT World Trade Agreement, puts us on the right road.
The road to Chechnya was perilous for the Russian army. President Boris Yeltsin ordered tanks and troops to the mini-state in southern Russia to put down a rebellion. But nobody really wanted to start a fight there, not Yeltsin, not the army, and certainly not the people of Russia. At week's end, it appeared Yeltsin might be backing off, extending a deadline for troops to move and offering to resume talks with the rebels. The same old thing from the sports world this week. In hockey, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman said the season is in peril.
In the absence of a new collective bargaining agreement with the NHLPA, I am instructed to cancel the 1994-95 season at such time as I'm able to determine that it's no longer possible to create a schedule to play a 50-game regular season and a full slate of playoffs and be done by July 1st.
And in baseball, it looked as though talks between owners and players had ended in failure until team owners said they'd hold off on their threat to impose a new contract on players for another week. Chief negotiator for the owners is Red Sox chairman John Harrington.
The fact that we're willing to walk through those doors of deadlines and open them up again should show you that we're dead set on negotiating a resolution to this dispute.
Harrington's message was welcomed by player spokesman Donald Fear.
I don't know that it's positive in the sense that I see an easy road to an agreement, but I think it is positive in the sense that they want to try again.
And this week, Major League teams urge fans to line up to buy their season tickets for whatever they put on the field in 1995, prompting these comments from Colorado Rockies fans in Denver.
They make enough money as it is. I mean, they shouldn't be asking for more money, I don't think.
They've obviously care a lot less about the fans than they do about the money on both sides. You know, I don't feel too much sympathy for either side.
I think it's the owner's fault. I think they should pay them the money or at least share the wealth.
Baseball players didn't share enough of their wealth with Uncle Sam. That's the gist of an indictment against Giants outfielder Daryl Strawberry, who this week pleaded not guilty to a federal indictment that charged him with failing to report income from baseball card shows. Strawberry is the first player indicted, but others are expected. That's a court clerk in Union, South Carolina, reading the indictments against Susan Smith. She's the mother charged with strapping her two little boys into the back seat of a car and running the car into a lake. And this week in Los Angeles, there were fireworks over a conversation between O.J. Simpson and football player turned minister Roosevelt Grier. ABC's Greg Jarrett reports.
Sparks flew during the hearing over Simpson's jailhouse talk with the Reverend Grier. It all started when Judge Ito posed a question about the meeting room at the jail he helped design and how a shouted conversation might override any expectation to a right to privacy.
We have created a situation to allow confidential private conversations, and if the parties choose to shout at each other, that's their problem.
Simpson lawyer Shapiro became upset with the judge.
And that the conversations of the person in the inmate position could clearly be heard in normal tones all the way across the hall 12 feet away. I think it's disingenuous for Your Honor to even make that suggestion.
But not as upset as Ito became with Shapiro.
You argue that the court is being disingenuous in that question. I'm a little concerned, and I would ask you to sit back and think about that for a moment before you pursue that line of argument any further.
Judge Ito called a break and strode forcefully from the courtroom, his anger reflected in an apology to a visiting lawyer from out of town for the lateness of the hour.
Life in the big city.
When arguments on the issue came to a close, Shapiro apologized.
The issue and our great concern for privacy, that I became very emotional. And that, as you know, is not my style, and I apologize, Your Honor.
Right, your apology is accepted.
As for the defense effort to cancel the so-called Kelly Fry DNA hearing and instead argue DNA before the jury, Judge Ito gave both sides a chance to work that out amongst themselves.
Both parties made to the court certain proposals two of which I'm going to contemplate. I will issue a ruling in writing by the close of business Monday, because I realize that time is of the essence, depending on which way the court rules.
The judge will have to decide that matter Monday as well. There was an obvious sigh of relief in the O.J. Simpson courtroom as Judge Ito declared the holiday has officially begun for the case.
Counsel and all of our friends have a nice holiday.
The next official court date for the Simpson case is January 4th, 1995, when a hearing on domestic discord is to begin. There is no official date for opening arguments, and though the next 2 weeks are supposed to be a holiday for the Simpson case, a lot can happen in 2 weeks. Greg Jarrett, ABC News, Los Angeles.
Disturbing news about the war on drugs from a new study made public this week. We're losing that war in the junior high schools of the nation. Health Secretary Donna Shalala.
The survey found that 13% of the eighth graders said that they had tried marijuana at least once in the past year. That's up from 9.2% in 1993, 7.2% in 1992, and 6.2% in 1991.
It's not just that the kids are smoking pot, says drug czar Lee Brown. They're smoking very potent pot.
The marijuana that's being used today is at least 10 times more potent than marijuana of the 60s and 70s. That means that it causes not only emotional problems, but also physical problems.
Sharon Groves is a lucky woman, lucky to be alive. She was working in the mountains of southwest Colorado when she was attacked by an aged and starving mountain lion. Groves actually managed to fight off the big cat and survived with only some bite wounds. She told reporters how she did it.
I had a pair of forceps on my fishing vest, and I took them with my left hand and stabbed it in the eye and basically sat on top of it for about 10 minutes or so.
But Jeff Weir of the California Fish and Game Department says most people who work, hike, or jog in the mountains shouldn't go one-on-one with mountain lions.
You go in pairs. You don't roam around at dawn or dusk. That's when the mountain lions are looking for something to eat.
Something for lunch or a late-night snack when World News This Week continues.
Picture a playground filled with four-year-old children. Picture each face so full of promise. Well, which child deserves to be read to? This one? Or is it that one over there? Which child will get a hot lunch? Who will have a chance to sing? The choice is yours. Volunteer for Head Start. With your help, more low-income preschool children can get what other children already have. Call 1-800-27-START for more information and a brochure on volunteer opportunities with Head Start in your community. Change the world of a child, and you change the world.
Brought to you by Head Start, Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
It's likely that nobody delivers more pizzas around the country than Domino's, so it's perfectly natural that Domino's has come up with a lot of unusual statistics about Americans and the way we behave in our homes, at least when there's a pizza truck in the driveway. As far as that pizza truck goes, Tim McIntyre of Domino's says it would prefer not to park behind a luxury car.
The more expensive the car, the lower the tip. This year, we've noticed that people that have a Lexus in their driveway tip an average of 20% below what other people do. Meanwhile, those folks who have a Ford Taurus in their driveway tip the highest, about 15% higher than the average.
And once the pizza man gets to your house, he'd prefer you'd be wearing clothes when you open the door. It's not embarrassment, says McIntyre. It's just that people with no pockets generally don't have any pocket change.
There were 23% more nude people than in 93. Those are the same people who generally don't tip.
And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stu Chamberlain. I'm Dave Barrett, ABC News, New York.
More Americans get their news from ABC than from any other source.